Hello, everybody, and welcome to Come Rain or Shine. As always, thanks for listening. Today, we have a gentleman. I met him through Elevate. Elevate is an organization that has been pulling together speakers and presenters. And Stephen and I have participated in the past, and we have gotten, we were chatting before we hit record here. We've gotten real busy this year, which is a great sign. Lots of stuff to do out there. And Stephen was telling me he's been spent a lot of time publishing with his books and his friend's books and a lot going on. But we are going to jump in. Stephen, how are you doing today?
I'm excellent, Dan. Thanks for having me on board. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I, you know, the first time we met on Elevate, you have a very distinctive voice, as everyone's going to hear. So it's, did you ever do radio?
I never have. I've been told that a couple of times. A couple of people tell me to do podcasts, but I'm a writer at heart. So I got to just keep writing. I don't want to host a show right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause there's a, what's it? Wolfman Jack, right? He was the famous one.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah,
that's good. So Stephen, as we always start the show, tell us a little about your background and your story and kind of how you got to what, where you are today.
Well, I've had a very fortunate life, Dan. I mean, at the age of 20, I graduated from college and was hired by Texas Instruments, and they moved me from my little hometown of Las Vegas, Nevada to Dallas, which is a heck of a cultural change. And after 3 years, Texas Instruments sent me to Singapore, and I ended up living in Singapore for 21 years, worked for three other multinational organizations and started my own business. Moved down to Australia for 12 years, lived outside Melbourne, ran most of my Asian business from there, and built an Australian business. Then moved back to the United States about 10 years ago. And my father started having some health issues, so I became his primary caregiver. And now I divide my time between Southern California and Mexico City. So I'm still living outside the United States at times. So
that's fantastic. Yeah. So here we're kind of getting into a lot, talk about cultural changes, and Singapore is on my list of hopeful destinations. Tell us a little bit about that country, because I saw a commercial recently and it kind of goes through, you know, they said we wouldn't survive. They said we couldn't do anything. And just the story of Singapore is pretty amazing from what they had. I think they're maybe one of the poorest countries in the world to just this booming economy.
They really are. It shows the power of a government that really knows how to invest and get overseas investments. But you're going to love Singapore, because the first part of your podcast, Come Rain, because every day it rains in Singapore about 3:30 in the afternoon. So you get a lot of rain in Singapore. But no, it is an economic success story. You know, the airline, the airport are tremendous success stories. U.S. companies are, you know, their chip manufacturing has been there for many, many years. Great people, hard workers. Can't really say enough good things about it. I guess the only thing negative I could ever say about Singapore, since I moved there in 1980, I could take a taxi for about $3.80 across the entire country. And now I think you get in a taxi, it's like $4.50 when the flag falls. So it's becoming an expensive place without a doubt, but it's a wonderful place.
I guess you call that the price of success.
I would say so.
Yeah. So I'm headed down next month to Australia for Valerie and I are going for a month to do some work and see and meet people. We've never been there, so we really wanted to extend down there and see that. So tell me about the culture down in Australia.
Culture in Australia is a little bit different than Singapore. I mean, they don't work to live. I mean, they don't live to work, they work to live. So, you know, 4.5 day work week is pretty good in Australia. They've got a good work-life balance without a doubt, always have, but good people. Great place to visit. I mean, whether you're going to Brisbane on the Gold Coast, on the east coast of Australia, or I would highly recommend outside Melbourne taking the Great Ocean Road Trip, which is just beautiful. It's probably even more beautiful than Highway 101 in California. It's just really? A great place. Yeah.
Okay. We will be on that. And then you said you came back to the States, 10 years ago, and now split your time between here and Mexico City.
Yeah, I do. I came down to Mexico City just over three years ago, and I thought it'd be my only trip to Mexico City. And I spent a little bit of time as a tourist, and then I met a lady who's now my girlfriend, and we're now living together in Mexico City, and I'm helping her publish her books. She published three books during the pandemic and just came out with her fourth book last month. And I came out with my 22nd book last month. So we've been in a writing whirlwind for most of this year.
22nd book.
I know, it's crazy.
One book was going to kill me. I can't imagine that. So So tell us. So let's hone in on kind of what you're doing now, and you know, the books and the topics, and kind of what you're helping people with.
Well, the books I started is in marketing because that was my functional background in the companies I work for. And over the years, as I became a facilitator and trainer and coach of leaders, I've started writing books more on leadership. And the latest book is the one I'm very passionate about. It's called Humany Leadership. Humany is H-U-M-O-N-Y. I created the word. You won't find it in the dictionary, but it combines human, humanity, and harmony. And it emphasizes the leading of people and really the need for leaders today to create workplaces of wellness and harmony. And I always get a chuckle from people because I ask people, tell me about harmony in your workplace. And they laugh at me. They said, there's no such thing as harmony. And I say, that's what we need. Everyone coming out of the pandemic, we all need more harmony in our personal lives, our professional lives. So that's Absolutely. Where my passion is right now.
So tell us a little bit, what's the approach? How should be people think about this? Because to your point, at post-pandemic, all the rules changed. Right now, it's a workers' market. So, you know, and they say, well, I want this. And employers say, we can't do that. All right, bye. You know, it's so, exactly. I know the employers are trying to relearn, and culture used to be a nice thing to have. Now it seems like it's a bit, you need to be competitive to be able to have that. So, what's the secret formula here when you think about, all right, the company needs to get results, people need to work, and there has to be this, you know, this pressure to get results because that's what economically would keep companies going. But how do you kind of split the difference between we got to get results here, but we also want to get some harmony. We want people to actually enjoy what they're doing. I was talking to a group today in college. I said, look, there's many days you get home. You're like, man, I did not have a good day. But if you have more good days than bad, you probably have a great job because that's just what, you know, that's what it's about. Getting challenged all the time and things aren't always going to go your way. But what are some things some leaders out there can think about and maybe start doing on Monday just to kind of act differently than they did last week?
Well, a great question, Dan. And I think that's really the premise of the whole book. I mean, my philosophy is that managing people is a 1980s construct. Nobody gets up in the morning and says, I can't wait to be managed today. And I certainly can't wait to be micromanaged by my boss. But look, I mean, that has worked. That management, that directive style has been very efficient up until the pandemic. And as you just said, people are now reevaluating what's important to them in their lives. So I don't think managing people is applicable or relevant in today's world. And it is why people are leaving bosses as well as organizations. There was a vice admiral, I think the first female vice admiral in the United States Navy, her name's Grace Murray Hopper. She said, you manage things, you lead people. Mm-hmm. And I've extended that philosophy of hers to say, you know, in honesty, you manage things, you manage policies, you manage procedures, you manage processes, but you lead people. And people want to be led. I think if you do that, if you have that mindset change that you're there to lead people, develop people, you'll get the results. I don't think it's a division, as you said. I don't think it's an either or situation. If you lead people, you'll motivate them. You'll encourage them. You'll get their innovation. You'll get their creativity. And that's where the future results are going to come from. I mean, we hire people for the brains. You know, in the 1960s, 1970s, we hired people for their bodies and their hands. Now we really hire them for the brains, but now we got to let them use their brains. And I think that's one of the key differences. So I'll just sum it up with one last sentence is basically leaders, stop treating employees only as a means to an end. They're more, they're human beings, and treat them as human beings, fellow human beings.
So this is, I've been hearing these stories about remote working and, you know, there was just, I guess it was just a court case because the employer insisted that the worker had to have their video on all the time at their desk so they could see that they were there working. It's like, talk about, I mean, that's like the epitome of micromanagement. So every time I hear, and I'll see if you agree with me on this, every time I hear about those moments, people say, well, we need to come back to the office because socially it's better. We're going to be more creative. It's just the way things should be. What I conclude is, you know what? What I believe is you just don't trust your people. And you Absolutely. Think that if they're physically in a space, an office space, somehow you're going to get more out of them, or they're going to work more, or they're going to be more committed, or whatever that looks like. But I think at the end of the day, they don't trust them. And I guess it's like, I don't know if they trust them not to get the job done, or they don't trust them to work the quote unquote 8 hours per day they're being paid. But it seems like, it just feels like to me that organizations have trouble measuring what they want to get done. And so somehow they default to just the amount of hours you're sitting somewhere, which just doesn't seem, it seems kind of dysfunctional.
And that has led to this thing called quitting, because if people are saying, well, if you can pay me one or two ways, you can pay me for my creativity, my thinking, the value I bring to the job, no matter how many hours that might be, or you can pay me for the 8 hours a day. Well, if you're only going to pay me based on the 8 hours a day, I'm just going to give you 8 hours a day at minimal effort. And so I think that, and you, interesting, you talk about trust, Dan. I've seen so many bosses over the years, or I've coached and mentored them, and they take over a new team. And sometimes I actually sit with them and they take over a new team and they say, here's how you can earn my trust. I don't think that works today. I think you have to walk in the meeting and say, as a new leader, say, I trust you. Now, here's how you can lose my trust. Don't tell me when a problem comes up. Don't sweep it under the carpet. Don't let it get so big it becomes a crisis. Be truthful to me. Don't lie to me. This is how you can lose my trust, but you have my trust. And I think people will work a lot more for that individual than the person who comes into the group and says, okay, here's how you have to earn my trust. Like, why do I have to earn it?
Right. Yeah. And it's funny because it's very similar to when I used to have new leaders come onto my team. I would say, look, I know your ego and everything's saying, I want to show everyone here, make a great impression and prove that I should be chosen for this job. I said, I chose you for this job. I know you can do this job. You have nothing to prove. All you have to do is prove to me that you're going to care about all the people here and get to know them and just really learn the business so you can be good at what you're doing. And a lot of times leaders come in and they want to, you know, I need to show that what I'm doing. And it seems like that's a big part of this whole leadership problem, that everyone's show dressing. It's like, I will show that everyone's here. I know what they're doing. I know what they're working on, but they're, and leadership keeps going back to these KPIs and looks at stuff that can be easily measured, but very short-term kind of things, and not creating these environments where people really, because that's where it's kind of ironic. When you take back some of those controls, people actually do better and they'll do more. And the tighter we try to hold on, the more we choke the creativity off. And it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy along the way. So how do you get a manager? Because here's what I'm, you know, I think if you're listening to this, you're like, hey, you know, Steve and Dan, I believe everything you're saying, but my boss doesn't get it. You know, I want to do all these things, but my boss doesn't get it. Right. So what can people do in jobs when they just, the organization maybe not have that vision, but they know that's the right way to lead?
Well, I would suggest do it. Do what you and I are talking about for your team, for your department, for whatever portion of the business you lead. Two things will happen. You will get better results. You'll have less employee turnover than everyone else in the organization. You'll have more creativity in the organization. And suddenly you're going to be seen by the organization as a great leader. So you're, you know, what's in it for me as a leader? You're the one who's going to get either promoted or headhunted by somebody else. You can't change the whole organization. So change what you can control. Do it for the people that you lead. And I wrote the book. A leader to me is anyone who leads people. I don't care if you're a team leader, a first time supervisor, a frontline leader, a manager, on up to an entrepreneur. If you lead people, you're a leader. And this is what the book is all about, is how to lead with this focus on understanding that the people you're leading are humans. And part of that, and this is like, and organizations are going to be slow to do this, but individual leaders can do this. I think the silver lining coming out of the pandemic has been that most people, most leaders understand that not only do people have lives outside work, which we used to talk about before the pandemic, but now we realize people have responsibilities outside work. And when you respect their responsibilities, whether it's caring for an elderly parent, you know, picking up kids from school, taking your children to a sporting activity, as long as you're getting your job done, you know, that's what we pay you for, is get your job done and understand and respect that people have responsibilities. I remember my first job, I almost had to beg and plead to go to a dentist on a Wednesday because my tooth was hurting so bad. And my boss at the time says, doesn't your dentist work on Saturday? I go, I can't wait till Saturday. This is killing me. Well, wow. People have to understand that's a different world today.
Yeah, it is. No, it is a different world. And to your point, I think I read these articles about the 80s and management and organization and continuous improvement. And the engineers put a real good system in place, but it got out of control. And it seems like now we've lost touch with a lot of that, just these simple things. Like I was in a session the other day with a group of a company that runs communities, apartment communities. Mm-hmm. And at one point in the conversation, and I applaud this manager to raise their hand and ask the question, because I love it when people have the courage to do that. But she said, so when you talked about, you know, giving our clients, the people who live in our communities, giving them events and giving them sort of this experience they want. She said, how do we figure out what that is? And I didn't want to sound like a smart ass, but I said, well, look, I said, we overcomplicate everything. I said, have you asked them? Mm-hmm. She's like, oh no, I haven't. Once again, we just get so caught up in the process and the whole system. We don't think about what if you ask them what they want. Now there's different ways to do that. There's surveys, there's different, but just go have a conversation and find out and try stuff. And you're not going to be right all the time. But I think we're losing a lot of this common sense. And
we are, once again, just
treating people on this up and up. And, you know, they say, hey, I'm going to be late tomorrow. Okay, great. Do you want to know why? No, you're doing a great job. Just that's fine. And getting a new, I think, expectation. And what comes along with that is just, you know, with your tooth story is, you know, well, of course you should go right now. We'll cover you. We got you covered.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden you're like, well, you're respecting me, you're trusting me, and now you're much more committed. So I think a lot of leaders are just going to figure this out. And once again, the biggest thing I hear from leaders is, look, Dan, I get it. My boss doesn't. And I think to your point, just start doing it, because you can make excuses all day long for not starting to try differently. And you're going to have to take some risks and go ahead and just be a little bit different than the other leadership. And culturally, it may not be a fit in your company, but I guarantee you're going to get better results. Because people want to cut through all this complication and this corporate speak and just like, you know what? I just want to get my job done so I can make money here and not be miserable and go home and raise a family. And, you know, we still have these basic needs we've had for thousands of years. And somehow we either overcommit what we're going to do or way undercommit or do it the wrong way.
I don't think anyone, I mean, the only risk might be making some, you know, judgment calls like that. Like, okay, you got to take your kids to school tomorrow, come in late, we'll cover you. You know, right. if your boss is going to beat you over the head for that, then I would suggest maybe you got the wrong boss, and you can join the other 6 million people resigning next month in the great resignation and find a better job, find a better boss.
Yeah. And you're hitting a point that I bring up often in sessions is large organizations and small organizations. Someone asked to do something as an exception, and right away we go to this thing going, well, if we do that for you, we got to do it for everybody. And it's like, well, you know what? Everybody doesn't have to come in 1 hour late on Fridays because they have a certain circumstance. It's just me, and I will work longer. And the way I used to treat that is, you know what? We'll try it. And if everyone wants to do it, then we'll come up with a new system. But we Absolutely. Always put these rules in place to manage exceptions or what might happen. And we think we're so smart thinking ahead. It's like, you know what? That most likely is not going to happen. So just do it. And if it does happen, we'll go revisit it. But we shut it down way too soon. And we close all these opportunities to create value that costs nothing to us as an organization.
And it goes back to that trust issue. And it also goes back to what you talk about hiring people. I mean, you go through this long hiring process. You hire somebody, as you say, you trust them to do the job. Why can't you trust them as a human being? I mean, is your hiring process so bad that you're hiring individuals that you can't trust their ethics? You can't trust them not to cheat the system? Right. Then there's something wrong with your hiring system.
Exactly. And the group out there that's going to do that is going to do it anyway, no matter how much you trust them or not. So it's cost of doing business.
Yeah. And there's always a 4%, but who do you want to focus on? The 4% they're going to screw you, or the 96% who are going to take it and really be innovative, really be creative, and really take your organization to the next level?
And here's the irony. Most organizations put policies in place to police the 4% and
Absolutely.
Punish the 96% who want to do the right thing, but just get limited because of the, you know, that 4%. It's, I'd say taking a step back now after being in the corporate life and seeing this, it's so obvious to me. And I guess our jobs now is to convince organizations to think this differently. It doesn't have to be this way.
No, and that's what you're doing in your podcast. That's what I do with my writing. I mean, and so much of it's a mindset. I mean, I had a conversation with somebody the other day and they said, well, we want to redesign how we manage talent. And I looked at them with a blank face. They said, what's wrong? I said, you don't want to manage talent. Talent management is the wrong approach. How about motivating talent? How about inspiring talent? How about unleashing talent? How can you create foundational structures to enable your talent to grow, to flow, to flower, to bloom? That's what you want to do. Stop managing your talent. Grow them. They looked at me like, okay, now we need to talk.
Yeah. Either we're going to extend your contract or you're fired. You never know which way that's going to go.
Exactly. Well, that's the risk you take sometimes when you give advice.
Yep, absolutely. So speaking of that, what are you doing today? Like when a company calls you, what services do you provide?
I provide consultancy in this area of how people can identify, you know, where the obstacles or hurdles might be if they do want to turn this into a culture. But mostly I'm facing the same situation you're facing. A lot of people that say, oh, well, we don't want to take the time to do this. Individuals, however, are different. So I'm doing a lot of mentoring and coaching of leaders, everyone, again, from like second line leaders on up to, you know, one of the people I coach is the chief technology officer in his organization. He said the same thing you said. He says, my CEO is never going to go for this. I said, well, do you want to do this in your CTO operation or your IT department? He said, yeah, I got 300 people. This could make a difference. I said, well, let's focus on those 300 people. We can't take care of the rest of the organization. So I'm doing a lot of that consultancy work, helping people figure out how to do this, how to do it authentically. Don't fake it. Don't make it a facade. And it's being well received, which is nice.
That's great. And we'll put this in the show notes. Where can anyone listening find you?
Well, the easiest place probably is LinkedIn. I mean, I'm under Stephen Howard, and I think it's Greater Los Angeles area, or my website is called calienteleadership.com. Those of you who know a little bit of Spanish know caliente means hot, but the second definition is passionate. And I'm passionate about leadership. And where I live in Southern California, the land is owned by the Agua Caliente Band of Indians. So the hot water, so to speak. So my tribute to our Native American landowners as well. So Caliente Leadership, Stephen.
CalienteLeadership.com.
Email is Stephen@CalienteLeadership.com. Yeah, you can find me somewhere, I'm sure.
Great. And if anyone's looking for Humani, in addition to the 21 other books you wrote, they can find it wherever books are sold, I'm sure.
Well, actually, just at Amazon. I self-publish these days, and it gives me greater control of things, and particularly how the speed of the book comes out. So everything's on Amazon, both in paperback and Kindle versions. They can get it through Amazon.
All right. Good to know. Well, Stephen, I hope maybe in 2023 we can catch up in Mexico City. We love it down there. It's a great place, great food. And I know everyone says, oh, it's such a dangerous place. I'm like, hey, every place is dangerous. Just have some street smarts and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Now, Mexico City's fine. There are parts of Mexico that you wouldn't go to, but there's parts of Detroit I wouldn't go to, in honesty. But yeah, come on down. The only negative of Mexico City probably is the traffic. There's 23 million people here, which interestingly is the population of Australia that you're going to visit. So same number of people in the whole country of Australia are here in this little valley of Mexico City.
Unreal. Wow. Yeah. Very good. Well, Stephen, thanks for joining us. CalienteLeadership.com. Humani, if you want to check out Stephen's book on Amazon. And as always, we really appreciate you listening. And thanks for listening to Come Rain or Shine.
Now that you've heard from the guest on the show, you also need to hear about our friends at Magical Vacation Planner. Dan, they're just delightful, Magical Vacation Planner.
They are. You know, you and I do I don't know if everyone out there knows, but you and I do training videos every month for them and talk about different topics and how to become even better at what they do. And they have such a great referral business. As I've always learned, when people are referring you, you're doing something right. And so if you want to get your first experience with interacting with a Magical Vacation Planner advisor, Jody's going to give you the phone number, but it is free to you, and they will make sure you have a fantastic vacation. They'll answer any questions you have. They'll make sure you get a great deal. And so there's really no downside to it, and it'll save you a ton of time.
That's right. That's one of the big questions people have about travel agents is, what does it cost? Is it cheaper? Well, you're going to get the same vacation. They get paid for by the cruise line, by the destination. You get so much better service and experience, and it's no extra cost to you. You can reach them at 407-442-0257 or go to dancockrell.com and look for the Magical Vacation Planner banner right there on the site.